Coming Up Next Time podcast is brought to you in part by Built to Ride. Head over to builttoride.ca and pick up some coffee or apparel. Use the exclusive listener code COMEUP when you check out for an additional 20% off your order. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. My next guest calls Prince George, British Columbia, home. He makes his living as a videographer, and as a result, he's a prolific content creator. If you follow him on Instagram, you'll be treated to solid content almost daily. Coming up next, this is, in no way famous, Jason Hamburg.
I got levels as well. Perfect.
Nice. So how have you been?
Good, man. Yeah it's been... I don't know. I was actually trying to think of the last time we talked because I think I was like, I still had my office at the house and so yeah, it would have been like March or something.
Yep. Yeah. It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Like all this pandemic-y stuff and then being able to get outside has really put a damper on hanging out with people.
It's like, I see you were out riding the other night though.
Yeah. Had a good time. I sucked at it as usual, but you know, A for effort. Like,
dude, it happens to the best of us. I was Saturday, like probably one of the worst rides that I've had in the last year. Like it was insane. I was so mad at myself just riding so poorly. And then we made some like bike changes that night that I was like struggling with. And then we went out the next day and I was like, yeah, dirt biking is the best thing ever. I love this, but it doesn't matter. Everyone has good and bad days. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, went riding on Saturday with my friend Steve and we did this little loop that usually takes him like 45 minutes. And I think I caused it to take an hour and a half, but whatever, no one was counting time. And this time we went on it. I was a lot more successful. I mean, I still fell. I think I fell two times, but you know, that's not that bad.
Exactly. Yeah. I had like two or three actual like real crashes on Saturday. And I was like, what are you doing? Just like, but I got a new saying called don't get mad because you get bad. And yeah. I try and remind myself and others of that. Cause then you see other people, they're like just their brain shut off and they get so mad and you're like, dude, you're infinitely worse right now. And that was kind of happening to me. So I had to keep like reminding myself, like, don't get mad. You'll get bad.
Yeah, I do believe that it has a significant impact on your ability. Like once you're frustrated, it's kind of like being distracted. You're no longer really focused and you're heavier on the throttle, heavier on the brakes, heavier on everything. And it all works against you. And then I guess like a tractor pull, the angrier you get, the harder the load becomes to carry.
Fair.
Yeah. So what have you guys been up to these days? I see a lot of content coming out from your media company.
Yeah, we're things are ramping up like significantly with Six Sigma stuff. This time of year is always like super crazy. Like pretty much all spring and like early start of the year, I'm just like my whole deal is like business development, and then I basically secure all these contracts that need to basically get shot between like now and the end of the year. Yeah. And so that's actually where I was today. We were on like a big shoot all day and it's good though. It's fun.
I know we had a talk before, but with like everything that's happened, we might as well just start from the beginning.
Yeah. Whatever you think is best. Like
it's better than just splicing it together. I don't know. Like, I mean, I could, but, you sound much better this time. The other room was a lot more echoey. I don't know. I don't even know where to start this. I guess like, tell everybody who you are. I mean, I already know that everybody who listens to the podcast knows, like that you're in no way famous. And I always found that name kind of ironic because I guess fame inside the moto community is not worldwide fame. It's just like recognition.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what's funny about like the in no way famous thing? Like I actually started, or I got that name. I gave myself that name, sometime in university. There was like I did a business degree in university and there was this group that I was a part of and they're like, hey, you know, we're organizing this event or whatever, like you should get a Twitter and then you can help us kind of like facilitate organizing this event. And I was like, dude, Twitter, only famous people are on Twitter. And they're like, no, we'd really appreciate it if you got Twitter and then you could help us out or whatever. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So I made my handle in No Way Famous. And it was just like a joke. You know, I think on Twitter I have like 12 followers or something. And yeah. But yeah, over the years, it kind of just turned into this thing. And actually, at one point, I would say probably 4 or 5 years ago, one morning, I was like, that's stupid. Just make it like Jason Hamburg. That's your name. Yeah. And I made my handle Jason Hamburg. And probably within the first like 2 or 3 hours, I had like 30, 40, 50 comments from people be like, what the hell? Why'd you change your name? Like, you're in No Way Famous forever, dude. And I was like, oh, okay. And this was like 5 years ago. You know, I probably only had like 800 followers or something, but all my friends and everything. So yeah, it's kind of ironic now because like you said, I'm not, you know, I'm not in any way famous really, but in the little like moto circle, like the Western Canadian moto circle, maybe people know who I am. And yeah, I just, hopefully people realize I'm doing it. It's a long, long ago joke. I'm not doing it to be a smart ass now.
Yeah, I never took it as being anything but tongue in cheek, right? Like, you know, but it is funny, like when you think about the moto community and recognition. I was interviewed for a podcast today, this fellow named Colton, and he was talking about how small Canada is, like there's only a couple of degrees of separation up here from riders. Like I've never met you, but you've ridden with my friend. And so that's 1 degree, you know, and just like, and it's like that through the whole Western Canadian sort of community. So it's kind of amusing when some people like yourself have a like name recognition and some kind of renown. And then your riding buddy, who's probably there all the time, is like, nobody knows who he is.
Like, yeah, totally. It's funny. Actually, I'm really lucky because the guy that I ride with all the time, I'm not even going to say his name because I don't think he's like that stoked to like be known.
Yeah.
It works out great for me though, because he's down to just like film and have somebody to ride with that, you know, is willing to push and ride hard with him. And, but yeah, just because somebody has a name doesn't mean they're necessarily like good or like, and whatever, you don't have to be good to enjoy dirt biking, but
I don't think followers equate to talent in every aspect, right?
Not necessarily, but yeah. It's pretty funny even like talking about those degrees of separation, like you know, it's literally like 2 or 3 degrees worldwide where it's like, you know, I'll talk to somebody and it's funny enough, it's like my audience is like, the biggest places are the US is the biggest, and then Canada is the second, and then Brazil is actually the third biggest. Wow. And I bet honestly, if I started to pull the layers back in like the Brazilian moto community, I probably have ridden, you know, with someone's friend or something, you know, in the grand scheme. It's pretty funny.
So why don't you tell everybody that's a stupid way to go.
It's okay. I didn't even really kind of do an introduction. We kind of went on a tirade about it was me trying to justify what In No Way Famous was all about.
That's okay. That's a huge intro.
My name's Jason Hamburg. I'm based in Prince George, British Columbia, which is like, for anyone who's not really aware, about 8 hours north of Vancouver, probably 8 hours west of Edmonton. We're pretty much like geographic dead center in the province. And I've been riding for, like 20 some years. Took a big break to go to university and party and like go wakeboarding and stuff. But kind of rediscovered it, I would say, like 6 or 7 years ago again. And now I'm full head of steam again.
That's awesome. And you grew up riding motocross in the beginning.
Yeah, I grew up racing motocross. Well, I shouldn't say that. I grew up, my dad got me a PW50 when I was like, I would say 3. Tied a rope to the rear fender and kind of just like taught me how to sort it out from there. And then I started racing probably when I was about 9. I remember my dad made the mistake of, there was big signs on the highway that said like motocross race this weekend. So he took us out to the local track, and I just remember being like this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, at the time I was playing like fairly high competitive baseball, and I was like, I got to quit baseball and we're doing this, 'cause this is so rad. And yeah, I kind of just like told them that's what I wanted to do. And they started, you know, we started going to all the like local or regional races. And then, yeah, as my brother kind of got older, he got more into it, and we grew up basically racing, I'd say mostly like all around BC. And I was never like unbelievable, kind of like a mid pack intermediate guy, but I, you know, fast enough that I had like enough bike skill to get around the track. And then I, like I said, I kind of gave up once I was, I would say 17 or 18, my little brother started beating me, 'cause he could ride like every single day. And I was, had a job and working and like only kind of riding on the weekends. And when he started beating me like every single race, it was kind of like, yes, I'm over this. I ended up going to university and doing that whole thing. And, but yeah, got back into it. I bought a KTM 125 in 04. That would have been in like 2013. And, yeah, I just knew I wanted like a cheap bike, easy to fix, that I could kind of get back into it. And so I bought this little 125 and, you know, rode that. And when I got back into riding, it wasn't about motocross. It wasn't about racing. It was like, I just want to go and ride and have fun, and whatever conditions are the best, that's what I'm going to go do. So it's like, if it's been raining a bunch, I'm going to go ride sand motos. If it's super dry, I'm going to go into the trees where it's like not going to be dusty.
Yeah.
And, yeah, basically rode the wheels off that 125 for like 3 years, 4 years, and then got a YZ 250 and kind of became the Yamaha guy a little bit.
Yeah.
Over the, I'm now my third YZ 250. And, but yeah, that's kind of the jam. But no, I grew up racing moto, and I guess that's the wrong word, but that's definitely like plays a factor into how I like to ride and the things that I like to ride for sure.
What is the stuff you enjoy riding the most? Like, looks like a lot of single track.
Yeah. It's funny. I started, when I got back into riding with the KTM, I remember going and riding just like, I don't even know what I called it, like off road or yeah, single track. I think what I enjoy riding the most is, like I said, whatever the conditions are best for in that moment. We're really lucky in Prince George that we have this really interesting mix. Like, there's a couple motocross tracks, there's really good single track. You know, over the years, we've kind of built some like, I would say like legitimate hard enduro stuff. There's hill climbs, there's big sand pits. Like, for example, the last week or so, it's been like pouring rain. And so all the single track that's all clay is just like death cross. It's so scary and sketchy. Yeah. And so we've just been like hitting sand motos and, you know, beating ourselves up out there in the sand pits. And so, yeah, my favorite kind of riding is the one where it's like, there's a good group of people, everyone's stoked and the conditions are good. And then if the conditions suck everywhere, you just go and make it as hard as possible.
Seems like a good recipe for film. Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna do some fail takes this weekend. I'm gonna go ride something really hard. What's the gnarliest place you've ridden so far?
Gnarly in what sense?
I guess most difficult in an attainable or maybe exciting kind of way, like versus full on impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like, there's sections of trail that I've built that I think are the hardest trail that I've ever ridden.
Okay.
I know that there's harder trail out there in the world. But in Prince George, like the stuff that I've built or me and a couple people have built, I think is like the hardest stuff that I've ridden. But that being said, honestly, some of the scariest stuff that I've ridden or some of the stuff that's kind of hard for me relative to what other people think is like anytime I go south, kind of in like the interior of BC, there's so much square edge rock and it's so scary. Like we rode in Williams Lake, we met up with the Rider's Edge guys. They came up from Vernon and we went down kind of at halfway and a local guy showed us around and I'm like trying to keep up with these guys and it's just like crazy square edge and there's rock everywhere and my front tire's just like deflecting everywhere. And so like, for me, that's terrifying. Like I'll go and climb hills or jump over logs and stuff like all day, but trying to go fast in like rocky terrain is like, man, this is hectic.
Yeah. That's
so, it's all a matter of perspective, I guess. Like whatever you ride the most, you're going to kind of, it's going to feel the most comfortable and you're going to get the best at, you know?
Yeah. The trail I was on with Steve, there was a section where there's all these like wedges of rock all in a row standing upright, kind of like the back of a Stegosaurus.
Okay.
The gap on one, there's three lines to take. I missed the entry point on the first line and slipped into the middle line. And the best one was probably the far right. So basically I was riding through that little section. It was probably like a tire wide, front tire wide. And that's where I fell. Cause just like, whatever. I'm glad it was just a small little, like two bike length kind of thing for a step up kind of deal. But
right.
Yeah. Those ones scare me and I've ridden over them a bunch now. And I know that it's just an optical thing. Like they're really not that bad. It just like, yeah, it still makes me feel uneasy. Cause yeah, I don't know.
There's obstacles like that though. Like there's sometimes just things that for whatever reason, for however long, just like get into my head and don't necessarily make sense. Like I think I'm a really, probably one of the things that's limited my ability to be like fast, quote unquote, is I think about everything like a lot. And in order for something to work for me, I have to make sense of it.
Yeah.
Like I have to be able to envision myself doing it, understand how the bike's going to react. And I can usually do that like very quickly. But yeah, just like you're saying, sometimes there's just obstacles that don't make sense at all. And like, I'll see someone else do it. And I'm like, okay. No, still don't understand like necessarily, or don't like, can't envision myself doing that. Or
yeah,
you know, you just get it in your head that you can't do it. It's weird. Yeah.
That's probably the thing there. Like I need to be able to see myself successful, like even marginally successful, like to get through a lot of things. And that like that calculation happens as soon as I see the obstacle. And if it doesn't happen, then Steve called me out on it. I stop and then I've lost momentum. So now I've just compounded my problems.
Totally. Then all of a sudden, like things just get so much harder. It's
yeah.
Like you can put the best guy on a bike in front of like an obstacle and without the momentum, sometimes it's, well, not sometimes, it's almost always a lot more challenging. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I see that happen with people a lot of the time.
Yeah. You got to fight the bike instead of, fight yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess you've ridden with a variety of people. What's the, I don't know, like, I'm sure everybody shares some kind of failing. I don't know what it's called. Like we all arrive on the scene. We'll say like new riders and we have like these crazy expectations of keeping up or what have you. Then you guys go out on the ride and I know you're riding at 50% or maybe less and we're unable to keep up. And usually there's some trait that we all possess that you can clearly see is the anchor, the thing holding us back. What do you kind of think for that?
Yeah, I would say, I think it depends like where and what you're riding, but I would say like the vast majority of people who are riding, let's say off road, are riding like, you know, kind of flowy single track. There's maybe a little bit of like technical elements here and there dabbled in. And probably the biggest thing that I see happen all the time is people sitting down. And I'm like such a big, like, you got to stand up, you got to stand up. And the thing that's the weirdest part about standing up is how bad it feels at first. Like when you first start riding, standing up is such an obscure feeling thing. And it's just taking everything in your power to not sit back down. But, you know, people don't stand up. And then what happens is you start to get tired, which then results in more sitting down. And I honestly think that's probably the most common thing that I see happening. Like you could get into all of the technical pieces of throttle and clutch control and all that stuff, but all of that stuff kind of honestly can be alleviated by committing to standing up. I even had a guy message me the other day and he was like, hey, I'm kind of like struggling. I'm wondering if I could ask you some questions. And he was saying just, he knows, he's like, I don't stand up enough. And I was like, two things that you can do. One is either like do drills, choose a section of trail and be like, I'm not going to sit down no matter what between here and there. And, you know, do that and then turn around and go backwards and do it the same way. And like, be really kind of hard on yourself to not sit down and be okay with going slower. That's another thing. I think people are like, well, I can go faster if I sit down in the corners. It's like, yeah, you can, but over time you're going to be better if you stand the whole time. And then I told him, like, if you can't be that diligent and you end up just sitting down anyway, I was like, take your seat off and leave it at the truck. And like, that's like kind of like an old school moto mentality or like a moto thing. I remember like my dad taking my seat off and always hearing about kids' dads taking their seats off. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to set any like world records when it comes to like lap times, but it just like forces you. You sit down once or twice in your subframe and be like, oh, that's bad. I guess I'll stand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
muscle training.
I mean, totally. Yeah. You just get your body used to that and feeling, knowing what that feels like. And then you just have so much more control, like coming into obstacles and going through obstacles and all that. But if I was going to have to boil it down to one thing, I'd say it's probably the sitting down too much is what bites people.
Yeah. Everybody's guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. Like, I've been working really hard on it. And it was noticed by my mentor there, Steve, who busts my balls.
Like, dude, you know. I'm guilty of it too. Like I was telling you on Saturday, I had like such a bad ride. Like I couldn't ride my way out of a wet paper bag. And it was just like, yeah, you're coming to these like vertical walls, just sitting down because you're like tired and not riding with confidence. And then it just like compounds, you know? So
yeah.
It's a thing.
I guess going along with sitting down or standing up, I guess, bike setup, probably a lot of people have a poorly set up machine, that encourages them to sit down. Like if they're a taller fella, they don't have their bars in the right place or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You see a lot of like very, very hectic bike setup. I'm always cautious though, to like go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because then you get into the people who it's like, it's not their fault. You know what I mean? They're like, oh yeah, like if I had this or if my bike had that. And it's like, dude, you could put like Cody Webb, you could put like these like really gnarly dudes on some clapped out old KX450 and like that technique will overcome whatever pitfalls the bikes have.
Yeah.
You know, outside of, yeah, obviously, you know, some people it's like, who knows where their suspensions clickers are set at or like how much PSI they have in their tires, like really basic stuff. And that definitely can hurt them. But yeah, I'm always very cautious to like overstate how much the bike helps.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying that the bike helps, but if your controls are in the right spot where you expect them, especially when you're panicking, and if it's comfortable, when you're standing versus when you're seated, these things sort of add up, I guess.
But I always love to see the guy who's got like a fresh, like full Yoshimura pipe and silencer and like all sorts of bling all over their bike. And then their levers are like bent, like full C, and their bars are all like bent crooked. And you're like, bro,
yeah,
like your money should have went to some straight levers, please.
Yeah.
For the love of God.
I used to like when they're bent out on the brake side, like when it looks like the bull's horn or what have you, because it just felt nicer.
Yeah. It's like one little finger hook. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't mind that. But yeah, when they're busted, I replace them because it's really tough, especially when your gloves get wet and things, to grab like a tiny little stubby.
And yeah, totally.
Yeah, like holy Christ.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we won't get any sales pitches for Yosh or anybody like that.
Yeah, I've already done my damage, hey?
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. Again, I don't think anybody comes here for product placement. No. So, I guess I'm trying to think of some of the stuff we spoke about before, but, I do remember the one conversation we had, with regard to social media and, ranking, like YouTube and all that, having the algorithm, sort of selecting what's popular and what's not popular. Has that really affected you at all? Or do you not like the tagline we came up with was, it's funny that you have to entertain an algorithm before you get to entertain some people, because YouTube is now the gatekeeper from the audience. So
YouTube is crazy in itself, but even like backing up a little bit from there, when I first started, I guess, to like see a little bit of growth in my Instagram channel and yeah, like I said, kind of see my audience grow a little bit. The reason I kind of started to go for it on Instagram, I guess you can say, like, was I saw my business partner, who's actually like a crazy good mountain biker. He was like kind of getting a little bit of growth on his Instagram channel. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty sweet. Like he's starting to, you know, get deeper discounts or get little travel budgets or, you know, get obviously getting free gear and that sort of thing. And I was like, oh man, like I feel like in my space, I could do what he's kind of doing, you know? And so that's why I started to kind of push it on Instagram. But when I first set out on that, as far as like understanding the algorithms and understanding how it all worked, that wasn't really what I was doing or trying to do, was understand any of that. It was more like, well, I'm going to post a bunch. I'll use hashtags because I think they're a thing. And then I was really lucky. Like I had, you know, two or three posts that kind of got traction, and then you jump up like 1,000 followers and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Well, if I just like kind of keep doing this on repeat, it maybe will inevitably end up somewhere. And I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily like, I haven't cracked the code as far as the Instagram algorithm, but I feel like through the process of, you know, just trying things and seeing what sticks, I've kind of got it nailed down a little bit now where it kind of makes sense to me. But I would say, yeah, about 6 months to a year ago, I started down the rabbit hole of like trying to diversify my channels and build out this YouTube channel. And dude, it's about as clear as mud for me right now, actually, is like how to make that all work. And I think one of the big things, that I've realized is like the length of videos is really important. But yeah, like you said, you're just trying to entertain this algorithm because you know that the content is good. Like as I'm making the stuff and as I'm editing it and rendering it out, and I'm like, yeah, this is like, I want to make stuff that I think I would want to watch. And so I do that, and then it gets like 280 views and you're like, sweet, I'm dead inside. And then you'll have another one that just like happens to work its way into the algorithm, and it gets, you know, at the end of some like Red Bull video, it like shows up as one of the recommended ones and somebody clicks on it, and then it just like snowballs, right? So I'm still trying to figure that out. Obviously, it's like infinitely more work to build out a YouTube channel as opposed to, you know, a bunch of cell phone clips of me just like riding, which is what I do all the time anyway. And it's also kind of like, I'm in an interesting spot where in my professional life, like I actually am a co-owner of a video production company. And so as much as you think that that should be a huge advantage, I think there's also a big disadvantage where it's like, you get to the end of a full day of thinking about that and you're like, you know, all right, let's crack down and just like edit for another 5 hours, you know? So I have to kind of just, I'm not going to try and force the issue. I try and just like, if I feel motivated or if I have a cool idea for something, like I'll work on it. But as you know, I don't have like a set release schedule and all that sort of stuff. And I'm pretty certain that that also like hinders my YouTube's performance, where it's not like, you know, shout out to these people that are producing like a video a day or couple videos a week. Like that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Kyle Brotherson has a schedule of every second day.
Yeah, dude, that's so gnarly. Like, I mean, I guess he's been, you know, he's worked his bag off, I'm sure, to get to the point where now it is kind of his full-time gig and it is what he's doing.
Yeah.
But like, shout out to him for, in order to get there, he had to do the grind, you know, he had to go work full-time and then get home and be like, all right, I'm going to be like making content on the side. So
yeah,
I think, yeah, I'm interested just to see for like my own personal, what I'm capable of doing with that. Like I said, I think it's going to be like, if I'm motivated and I feel excited about a project, I'm going to like do it that way rather than just, okay, I got to got to put content out there. Cause like I said, I don't want to just like flood it with stuff that I'm not necessarily proud of.
Yeah. I understand that. Have you explored TikTok?
No, man, I don't, not big on the whole Chinese malware. Instagram's bad enough.
I feel it. Yeah. I'm with you on that one, but there's this guy in one of the forums that I follow or whatever. And he's got like 500,000 TikTok followers and he just puts out nothing, like literally nothing. It's super boring. And I don't even know how that happens, but like, yeah, he's whatever.
Yeah. I think even for like even on my Instagram channel, when I set out, I was never doing it to try to gain notoriety or like gain popularity. It's like weird because it goes hand in hand. Like if you get success with that, that's what success looks like. That's what success looks like as you grow this audience. But I wasn't willing to get there by like doing stuff that I didn't think was cool or like I thought, or it was cringy or like whatever, yeah. You know, it's like, what would be a sweet Instagram page? Oh, I don't know. Like, how about just a guy who's like, tries to be stoked? Cause I do try to like be excited and like try to talk about why I enjoy the sport that we all love. But then also like, I wanted to back it up with at least somewhat legit riding. You know, I didn't want people to be like, oh, this guy's got all these followers and he's like a hack. You know, I want to eventually, if I ever get a chance, you know, ride with the people that I look up to, like get a chance to ride with them because they think I can hang, not because it's like, oh, we can leverage him for his like big audience or something, you know?
Yeah. That's such a thing. Like, the shark and the pilot fish, like, I don't know. Someone asked me along those lines, like, some of the people that I'm asking to be guests on the show, like yourself or whatever, but most of it comes from listeners saying, you should try to ask this person. You should try to ask that person. So then I ask, right? Like, and then they say, yes, I totally don't expect any of their followers. And I can show that it doesn't really happen to stick around, right? Like, they might come in and listen to your episode and then they're out like, see you later, you know? So
yeah. 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 I remember, shooting photos one time. It was actually a really sweet situation. I went and I raced an arena cross probably like 3 years ago in Chilliwack.
Nice.
And I was pitted. I actually pit like in the same pit as Sean Moffenbeyer because I didn't necessarily have a pit and it was like full. We showed up like a day late and they're like, oh, whatever, you can just like pit here. So it was like Sean Moffenbeyer, who's like, you know, Canadian MX2 champion, and then me, and then Adam Entignap, like the seven deuce deuce. He's like beside me on the right. And so anyway, over the course of the weekend, I like kind of start chatting with Adam and I'm just like, you know, shooting the shit. And he's like, if people don't know who he is, you can look him up. He's the seven deuce deuce, but
he's awesome.
He's like, seems so ridiculously over the top. And then you realize that that's not like an act. That's just like who he is. And it's hilarious and awesome. So anyway, at the end of the weekend, we were like broing down. He's like, yeah, man, if you're ever in the States, like hit me up, like you can come shoot for me for Supercross. And then I was like, oh, well actually I'm going down to like watch the first two rounds of Supercross. Like, can you get me a media pass? And he's like, sure. So I went and I shot photos for him, at the Glendale Supercross.
That's rad.
It was awesome. It was such a cool experience. Like get the media vest and like down on the track and stuff. But yeah, I remember at that moment being like, oh dude, I'm going to shoot these photos for him. I'm going to like put them on, he's going to tag me on Instagram and I'm just going to blow up.
Yeah.
And I probably got like 8 followers and they were all like bots. And I was like, oh, okay. That's not how this works. Like I have to actually do something beyond that. So
yeah. Every time, Cody Webb likes one of the posts about Cody Webb, I get some, I don't know, stripper bot as a new follower.
Yeah, you're like, nice. Tack yeah. That one on. Yeah.
Zero posts, 5 followers, follows 2 people. Like, just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of funny. I guess you can't rub the shine off of a star. You know what I mean? Like, you have to go about it genuinely. Like, there's just no way to profit that way, I guess. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is like, if I kind of have this like thesis, right? I have this idea of what I want my channels to look like and feel like and be like. And I think ultimately my biggest fan needs to be myself.
Yeah.
If I think about how I got into filming or how I got into photography and all that stuff, like it was me and my brother would just take the like family camcorder with us riding. And, you know, 'cause you grow up, you watch Krusty Demons or you're like on Verb Moto and you're watching it like as a kid and you're like, oh, this is so sick. So we'd go and like make our own versions. We'd come back and we'd be like editing, but that was before social media, right? It was before there was a place to show anyone. And so we were our biggest fans, you know, like we would put all of this sweat equity into these like edits that we were making. And then we would just watch them on repeat, like just on Windows Media Player, right? You're like, yeah, this is so sick. And I think, I don't know, I feel like I'm not going out to try to like get any notoriety. Like I said, like, I just want to be able to look back on my channel, and I do it. You know, I look back, like scroll all the way down and be like, oh dude, remember when I went on that trip with those guys and we like rode that one rock face? That was sick, you know? And like, it, I think, and I hope that that kind of excitement and my excitement for my own channel like carries over, and that's what's getting people stoked. You know, I'm not kind of trying to chase trends or do anything in order to like grow the audience. It's more just like, I'm a fan. Yeah. So
I think if you try too hard, you might find a fast ramp up to success, but then in order to maintain sort of like a fake channel, so to speak, it'd become 5 times harder to do. And then as soon as you miss a beat, that's it. Like you're going to lose the audience. Like,
yeah. I think that's another thing too, is like, if I'm going to be, it's not work. Like, it's not work, because I know, like, you know, work is what actual people do for a living. Even my real job is like a joke. But it still gets to be a point of like, it is, you have to put effort into your page in order for it to like stay sustained. You know, like there's times when I'm beat up or I'm sore and like I'm tired and I don't necessarily want to go for a ride. But I'm in my like gallery and I'm like, I don't really have content for the next like couple days. And so, you know, I'll strap on all the gear, and I'm really fortunate. Like I have a trail that I've built myself right behind my house. And so it's like, okay, I'm getting low on content. And yeah, maybe I'm not as motivated to go and do it or like huck myself over a log or whatever, but I've kind of committed to doing this thing. Like, and now it's gotten to a point where like there's some sponsorship obligations, like people, in the grand scheme, is any sponsor going to be like, hey, you didn't post, you know, No. You only posted like once this week. Like, they probably don't give a crap. But like, I'm also, you know, I don't want to get a rap for being the person that does that. You know, I'm trying to be as professional as I can in the small capacity of my relationship with these people. So it still turns into a bit of a, not a job, but it's a bit of effort to put in. And so how bad do I want to put in effort for something that I'm not proud of? You know, if I'm going to do it, I want to like, whenever look back and be like, yeah, that was sick. Like, I remember that day when I was like so sore and tired and like just over it. But I went and I got that clip, and that was kind of cool. Like, grew up watching skateboarding a lot. Like, I grew up skateboarding, and dude, those guys are like animals when it comes to content. And like, they were the ones who like shaped that whole kind of business model of like a sponsored athlete whose job it is to make content. And at the time, they were like making, they'd put out like a part a year or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But you just, I still think to how gnarly those dudes are to just like be jumping off 20 stairs and like hitting concrete. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of fires me up to just go and like try something and get a clip, you know, have a vision for a clip that I want to get and then go out and do it.
What in your mind's eye is like the perfect clip?
Oh man.
Use the word ideal.
It's kind of funny. I think about so like the ideal clip or the perfect clip is a couple things. Like it's like shot well, and it's like well thought out as far as like how it's going to be filmed. And then what's actually happening is actually cool. Like some of my, like some really high performing posts are just whatever. I'm like riding a trail, cruising. And it's like, for whatever reason, the algorithm was like, yeah, right on.
Yeah.
All the views. But it has something going on that like kind of either was scary or that you're like proud of that you did, you know, you like made it over this log without dabbing or like through this section, like really clean. But then at the same time, the ideal clip also is like complementary to all your other clips. Like even on Sunday we were riding and the guy that I ride with all the time, he kind of was like, I guess my main filmer. And he's like, we should get a clip. He's like, we could go to this place. And I'm like, I have too many hill climb clips lately. Like we need to get something different. Right. So we went, you know what I mean? It would be like, again, it's almost like, it would be like a skateboarder being like, hey, here's my part. And then they just have like kick flips downstairs. That's all they did. They didn't do a single grind or like a single tech trick or like any diversity. Right. And So I'm almost trying to like think of that as well. Like how does each of one of these individual things I'm making, like how does it fit into the ecosystem of content that I'm creating? And so I'm not just like, I can't further pigeonhole myself. I'm already the Yamaha guy. I can't be like the hill climbing Yamaha guy. You know, it's like,
yeah,
got to go get some moto clips or go get some like technical rocks or something, you know?
Yeah. Keep it fresh. So
totally.
When you speak at, skateboard films, which one was your favorite?
Dude, do you know what? Actually, I probably like, this is going to be so lame and like not core, but I watched all the, like in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, all the pros had like their own little like part, which I'm pretty sure like must have just been like clips pulled from all their like real parts.
Oh yeah.
But for me, I'm like, that's Andrew Reynolds' part. And I'm like watching it. So I probably watched Tony Hawk's like the back end, like videos parts more than I played the game.
That's awesome.
Back in the day. So
I just got the re-release of the Tony Hawk Pro Skater. I wonder if all the video clips are on that. It's for the Xbox. And they just did some kind of anniversary thing. I really dive into it.
I probably like a year ago, I went and I watched them all on YouTube and I'm yeah, these are still like so sick. Like whatever, the level of skating is still like way more, way beyond what I could ever imagine. And yeah, it's funny.
Oh yeah. Haven't you found like, in the moto, like the Instagram moto clips, I find that everybody has a lot of static camera, like photography. So it's almost as if they're riding alone. They set up a camera right there and they take a single angle and they hit the same thing or feature a number of times. And, the way they edit it, it almost looks as if it's like a loop. Cause we'll say it takes four attempts to do a hill climb, to get over this like 2 foot log. So they hit the log and they fall, they hit the log and they fall, they hit the log and they fall, then they succeed. But like, wouldn't it be more entertaining if they moved the camera each time?
Yeah. I mean, I think that just comes from like, I don't know where it comes from. Like maybe it comes from just inexperience. I'm always like a little, I think jaded is the wrong word, but you know, my perspective of it is like so skewed. It's like, this is literally my job. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's all I do. So, yeah, I'm really lucky where the guys that I ride with, the people that I ride with, I'm not like overkill with them, where I've ridden with some people and you're like, oh my God, like, are we ever going to actually put any miles on? And they're just like, I'll get a clip here, get a photo there. And I'm like, no, this is so bad. Like at the start of a ride, if I'm going out with a group of people, I'll talk to maybe one, maybe two people, be like, hey, is there any chance today, when we get to this particular location, you can get this particular clip for me? And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, for sure. And it's like, okay, sweet. So then that's how I avoid the like static movement, right? You just give them a camera and you're like, okay, here, do this thing. I'm going to do this. But yeah, even with the, I do shoot actually a lot of like static type stuff. And that's a one big thing that I think a lot of people could do to kind of like mix it up. There's this term called sequencing.
Okay.
And it's kind of a little bit of a loose term, I guess, in the sense that I'm going to present it as, but like, yeah. So say there's this hill climb, like instead of just showing the hill climb from one angle, like show the approach, spin the camera around, show the base, put the camera halfway up from a different angle, like show halfway up and then show the top or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with doing that is like, that's a lot of work. Like now you got to hit this hill climb and get it clean like four or five times. And yeah, you got to do it, come back down, grab the camera, walk up, set it up, do it again, you know? But I don't know. I feel like again, trying to think of how do you mix your content up and yeah, kind of make it more dynamic, definitely throwing in those other angles or, you know, being conscious to not just be like, oh, I'm going to do the same, like fail, 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 succeed video.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do those from time to time. Cause sometimes things are a battle, you know, sometimes it is hard to get something. And some, it's good to not just always show the successes. It's good to show the failures, but, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm always a little bit probably hypercritical just because it is like my job.
That's fair. I mean, and you should be like as a professional, like,
yeah, people just filming bad stuff. I'm like, yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, what does that guy actually know? Probably not much.
Well, I mean, when all this started, anything was good, right? Like, but as the market gets saturated, it might not be the case. Like, you know, and it's just sort of how I see it anyway. I just find that as I'm going through it, a lot of people are, it's not like that they're reissuing old content because they're trying to fill a hole in their media. It just seems like a lot of it's getting kind of super repetitive. And I don't know. I just scroll faster past some of it, right? Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, in my opinion, the thing that I would be most wanting to like push for people is that idea of like make stuff that you're excited about and you think is cool. Cause if you think something's cool, other people are going to think it's cool, you know? And so, yeah, that's one thing, right? Even the people that do things that I'm like, that's cringy. I'm not down with that at all. And then you like see how many people are just like, yeah, that's awesome. I'm like, all right, whatever, you know,
it's hard to tell.
Different strokes for different folks, you know, and like it takes everyone to make the world go around. So
yeah,
I just want to make stuff that I think is cool.
I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man, like, if you're as hard a critic on yourself as I know you are, then, you know, that it guarantees some good quality content for some time to come.
Like, yeah. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, you'll run out of ideas. Everybody does, but I don't know there. And there is only so much you can do on a motorcycle, but there's so many places to do that so much that, variety just happens, right? Like,
yeah, totally. I mean, that's even a thing that kind of like motivates me when it comes to like trail building or trying to find new locations and do that sort of stuff. Right. It's like, yeah, I can't just go to the same trail every single time. And even if I wasn't filming, I would hate to do that. Like bringing it all the way back, like, I want to go and ride whatever's going to be the best at that time. And different places are better at different times. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we rode this spring that you can't even get into now because there's so much foliage and like so much has grown up around it.
Yeah.
But yeah, having that kind of extra layer or that extra variable of like content creation and trying to make things that people haven't seen is a good motivator to be like, oh man, like, I don't really have like a really cool one of these, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, then I think, is there one of those around? Oh no, not really. Like, we should build one, you know? So then you go out and you find a way to like tie something into an existing trail or whatever. And, yeah, I think that's a whole other element that I really enjoy is like building features to help support the content that I'm creating.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, obviously some people probably look up to, you for inspiration. Who do you look towards for inspiration?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Don't be sorry. Ask good questions all the time. It's good. So two people, I know a lot of people in a lot of different ways, but like, I think probably the most relevant one right now would be, Ryan Sipes, obviously.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Just from a straight up, like, he's no excuses and he rides it all. I think that's something that I try to incorporate into what I do, is like, be down to go ride motocross and go, you know, do hard enduro like the next day or later that same day, you know. I really look up to Billy Bolt, which is funny because I think he's like probably 3 or 4 years younger than me. But he's like legitimately so good. He's so like, has such a good attitude and is really good about not being the like, he doesn't have excuses, right? He's like, oh, I'm going to go race motocross and get like completely waxed. And I'm going to do that because it's going to make me like a better rider, you know? Yeah. And then he'll go and he'll ride hard enduro. He comes from like a trials background. He'll go race across country. Like, I really, really, everything that he's doing, that's been for a number of years now, I'm like, yeah, Billy Bolt is so sick. Like, I really just, and I think he has like a really cool style. Like, he's really like jibby. Like, he'll just bounce around and like do these little weird things. And you're like, oh yeah, that's pretty sweet. And then actually that whole thing, like the whole idea of like ride it hard or not ride it hard. The whole idea of like ride it all and like riding all the sorts of disciplines actually comes out of growing up. One of my favorite, I was also really big into like freestyle skiing.
Okay.
And there was this guy, his name was Dane Tudor, and he put out this part, and it was like the first time that I had ever seen it. But the part started out, I can't remember if it started out and he was doing like street skiing, like hitting rails and urban and doing all this stuff. And then all of a sudden he was like up in Alaska, like skiing backcountry. And at that time it was always, yeah, maybe somebody had like big mountain skiing and rails, or they had park and then some big mountain, but they were never doing it like at a really high level across the board. They were always like, oh no, he's a backcountry guy or he's an urban guy. Whereas Dane's part was like legitimately like the best skiing in the whole movie from both areas of expertise was like this guy. And I was like, man, that's so sick. And I took that into skiing when I was like still skiing a lot, but I think it's translated that mindset into my dirt biking. Like, I want to be good at everything we ride, and not really complain or be like, oh, I'm not that kind of rider. It's like, I ride a dirt bike, which should be the norm, but it's not, you know, like so many people are like, yeah, I'm an off-road guy. Like, I don't ride the track. Or it's even worse, I would say, the moto guys who are like, I'm not an off-road, I'm not a fucking dork. It's like, no, dude, like off-road dudes are legit. They will wax you, you know?
It's hard work.
Totally. Yeah.
Like, I have no place on a moto track. I know that, but like, I can fake it, I guess. I don't know. But I hurt myself constantly. So it's just like, I know that there's no legs in that race. But like off-road's fun, man. And it feels thrilling. You know, you're just halfway through second gear and it feels like it's 100 miles an hour in some sections.
Right? Yeah, totally. You're just like, I'm going so fast. And then you'll like film it and be like, it's just literally like the worst, like Jeopardy music as you go past. And you're like, darn it.
Yeah. Well, but it's just your bars are almost kissing trees and it's just like crazy. And then you're in third gear and fourth gear. I think I got in fourth gear on this weekend. I was just like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, I never slow down on this trail. So it was just like this little spot that opened up. So I was like, dun, dun, dun. I'll get there trying to catch Steve. And then I was just like, oh no, this is a bad idea. It's a bad idea. And then get back down to where it's safe.
Yeah. It is always still to me like a challenge. It's always harder for me to go from riding a lot of like hard enduro and really slow technical stuff and then going and riding moto, because the speeds are like legitimately fast, you know. Oh, yeah. Like, it's like the best way to get around this place is to twist the throttle. Wow. And I just, your eyes need time to like catch up to that speed, and like your all your reactions and all your timing is just like off, you know? So it is tricky, and it's why guys like Ryan Sipes are like so gnarly. Like that dude is just like racing supercross and then he'll just go and ride hard enduro and come back and go race. Like, damn, dude, impressive.
He's awesome to watch, man. Like a boatload of talent or just no care for personal feelings and safety. I have no
one of the two.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, whatever. Hopefully, maybe he's just like, I got a career that's going to be this long and I'm going to make as much money in this career as I can. So I'll do everything that I can. And then when I retire, I'll be fine. Like,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know. I'd like to talk to him, but he doesn't return my calls. I don't blame him. You've been on Instagram and YouTube for some time. I know it's not easy to reach out to content creators on YouTube, but Instagram makes it so that they're essentially just a text message away. How do you deal with audience engagement, like the DMs and all that kind of stuff?
Sometimes it's like a lot, but then other times you realize how much it means to people, which is like, that sounds ridiculous. And it's like such a trip for me to even say, but it means a lot to me when somebody like takes my opinion at the level that they take it. It seems like sometimes, it depends kind of like some days I'd say probably on average, I get like 10 to 15 messages a day that are just like unprovoked kind of like, hey, what's this? Or what do you think about that? And so I was just kind of, try and either when I have coffee in the morning or just like chilling after work, I'll try and kind of get through them all. I remember kind of early in the Instagram like realm, and like I would reach out. There's kind of a term, I don't know if it's like a common term, but like in like skiing and mountain biking and stuff, like to be a grom.
Yeah.
It's like to be like a young kid, right? You're like, you're a grom. And I remember like I was full grom level for a long time in my life, like probably way like older than I should have been, but I'm still just like so geeked out on all these pros. Like remember when I was skiing a lot, like adding pros on Facebook friend, and then they'd add you back and you're just like literally bragging at the ski hill. You're like, yo, so-and-so added me as a friend on Facebook. And everyone's like, what? And so like, I get it from that side. So it's super trippy to be on the other side of it.
Yeah.
But I understand, how important it is to like be engaged and be answering questions. And like I said, people are not coming to me with just like useless questions, like they're asking a lot of questions about Yamahas, they're asking a lot of questions about like technique and riding tips and that sort of thing, or a lot of maintenance stuff. And so I just try and answer, everything as best I can. Or if I don't know the answer to something, I'm really fortunate that I'm fairly well connected with people who probably do know the answer, whether it's like a sponsor who sells the product that somebody's asking about, or, a mechanic who's way more dialed than me. Like, I'll try and make those connections and try and just like get people the answers they want to know. Like, I don't also want to be telling people. There's so many times, like, I'm not exactly like a whole rock star mechanic, Yeah. I can get around a bike. I can do a top end. I can fix most of what needs to be fixed. But, some people reach out to me and they got like just these crazy, it's like, I'm like, are you working on a dirt bike or like some sort of space launch missile, dude? Like, what are you talking about right now? And so I'll just be straight up like, I don't know. I don't even know what that part is. I'm sorry.
Out of my depth.
Yeah. That's above my pay grade, dude. So, my biggest thing with like engagement is I think it's awesome. And like, I just want to uphold that on my end to get back to everyone, when they have questions. And I actually, for the one of the biggest challenges, and people that don't have a big like people that don't have like a significant audience on Instagram would never know this, and I never knew this until my audience kind of grew a little bit. If you send me a DM and I don't have time to answer it, but I accidentally open it, like I can mark it as unread, and then that gives me the chance that I can come back and like respond to you later. But so many people will ask me questions like in the comment section of a post, and if I have a post that's like doing particularly well, and you have like over 100 comments, sometimes it's a bummer and comments can kind of like get lost in the shuffle. Yeah. And I try to, if I see them, I'll like them, almost as a way for me to like keep track of like what I've seen, make sure I'm not missing anything. And I am answering people's questions.
Yeah.
But I also do go back and, you know, probably try and look at the last like 5 posts every couple of weeks to be like, hey, did I miss anyone's questions? And it sucks because there's times both on Instagram and on YouTube, like where I'm like, oh my God, I haven't responded to this guy in like a month. I'm like, yeah. Hey, so-and-so, like, I'm sorry, I missed your thing. Like your question about my clutch lever, like here's the answer, you know? Yeah. But I didn't realize how easy it is to lose track of things until I was, you know, you have like over a certain amount of followers and there's actual like a lot happening. You're like, I feel bad every time it happens. I'm like, oh, so I usually send people a message and be like, hey, sorry, like here's your answer that you were looking for.
It's so here's a weird one. Do you ever feel a little bit of imposter syndrome? Like you've been you the whole time. And then all of a sudden there's like this version of you that sort of, I don't know, developed in the digital realm that's connected with the physical realm.
Right.
And, so is there ever like a weird thought or like, how the hell is this happening kind of thing?
I mean, yeah, a little bit, but at the same time, I'm just like, I realize it's funny. I feel like the humility in me wants to be like, I'm very lucky that yeah. I like a certain thing hit at the right time, or like, well, I'm a weirdo and I like was riding with studs and people were like, oh, that's weird, I'll like it, you know? And then that kind of like ballooned out a little bit. So there's the humility in me. It's like, I'm really lucky. But then at the same time, I do have to kind of remind myself, it's like, well, yeah, luck can get you one or two like of those initial like successful posts, but like you do work hard. And I look back and I'm not like ever kind of cringing at what I've created. I'm like, no, like, I feel like my mission has been be like a legitimate rider first. And then if people like that, cool. Like that'll result in something. If people don't give two shits about that, then it will result in nothing, but at least you're like stoked on riding. So, yeah, there's also a part of me that's like, I don't necessarily get that feeling of like imposter syndrome. It's kind of like, no, you're like, you've done what you wanted to do and it's resulted in that success, and you've maintained that success by like continuing to work at it and, you know, do what you need to do. So yeah, I don't know, at the risk of sounding egotistical, we could always just say, yes, I'm very lucky, but I also feel like kind of good about what I've done, you know?
Yeah. You've worked hard for it. Like it didn't just come overnight or anything. So whatever, like, I was just curious. A lot of people handle recognition differently, and a common feeling for some people is just like, why me, or imposter syndrome kind of stuff. So but whatever. And then I got another weird one, Yamaha. Like why Yamaha? There's a lot of options out there.
Yeah. Yamaha's one of them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's definitely weird, especially like I would say, as much as I say, oh, I like to ride it, I like to ride all everything or like all these different disciplines, I would say the bulk of what I'm doing is like enduro, if not, you know, hard enduro. And in that realm, it's kind of like, you know, you have your KTM Huskies, you know, in Europe, you have your gas gases, you know, Sherco's making more of a push here. And then somewhere deep off in like weirdo land is the Yamahas. And for me, it all started, I had I kind of just had like a relationship with the Yamaha dealer in my hometown. And at the time we were doing, they also sell like Articat snowmobiles and Yamaha snowmobiles. And we were doing a little bit of like filming work for them. And so then they were, you know, a bit of a client. And then that kind of turned into like, oh, you know, I also ride dirt bikes, and we were just chatting or whatever. And they started giving me like 10% off parts and then 15% off parts. And then it's like, cool, you're on like the employee discount. And because I was, you know, making stuff for them and trying to promote their shop and everything. And at the time they were just a Yamaha dealer. And, And then that eventually turned into like, okay, well, I have this old KTM. I want to buy a new bike. And I picked up a 2017 YZ250. And it was literally like almost entirely sparked out of these guys are the best shop for me. You know, like I have a great relationship with them. I feel like I can direct people to their shop and they won't let me down by being like shitty to other people. Yeah. You know, yep. Like that would be such a bummer to be like, oh, did you go and talk to Jamie at PG Motorsports? And they're like, yeah, he was the worst. You know, it was always like, yeah, Jamie's awesome. He like hooked me up or whatever. So when I bought that YZ250, it was like, well, I was truly not really riding hard enduro. I was more like a little bit off-road, a little bit of moto. Like I was kind of more in the middle. And, but then when it came time for that next bike, I had kind of reached a point where a little bit I had started to carve out this like niche of being like a bit of a Yamaha guy. And it's actually funny. And I think a lot of people would be surprised by this, but when it came time to buy my second YZ250, PG Motorsports was now no longer just a Yamaha dealer, but they were actually a KTM dealer.
Okay.
And so like, I probably had the opportunity if I wanted to go from Yamaha to KTM, but I had kind of started to carve out a bit of a niche, like in my audiences to like yeah. be the Yamaha guy. And, you know, at that point now I've had this bike for a couple of years. I like have all these parts. I'm like kind of set up and I know the bike and I never really ever felt at a disadvantage, to be completely honest. Like, yeah, maybe the e-start would be nice. And I honestly didn't notice e-start until just recently. One of the main guys I ride with, he just got a Husky 300 and it has electric start. And now all of a sudden, like, I'm like, damn it. Now he can like stall it. And if I stall it, I'm like going to lose a bunch of time. But yeah, anyway, I kind of carved out a little bit of a niche. And then when it came, I just got a 2021. And now they're a Yamaha, KTM, and a gas dealer. Like they're actually like a three line dealer. They're killing it.
That's crazy.
And same thing though. I was like, you know what? I have all these parts. This bike has been like, these bikes are awesome. Like the suspension that comes with is super rad. You know, the engines are bulletproof. It's like they got it figured out. And I've never, like I said, ever felt like, oh man, I'm, and to be the other thing is like, I'm not really racing. Like I don't need, if I stall it, I just start it again. You know, yeah. Realistically, it's not like I'm like setting out to like win the next Erzberg, you know? So, anyway, I think the Yamaha thing for me, it kind of stemmed out of that relationship with PG Motorsports. And then it grew into this like just enjoyment out of being the weirdo.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's turned into like this really great relationship. Like, you know, I've actually had a chance to meet some people at Yamaha and like we've, you know, been able to chat and they've kind of like offered up some support through PG Motorsports and stuff. So that's been super awesome. And yeah, at this point, I probably have damn near enough spare parts and stuff to build some sort of like Frankenstein bike in the back shed with all my like spare nuts and bolts and stuff. There's a drawer in my, I have like a standing chest toolbox and it's called the Better Than Nothing bin. And it's like, it's parts that I've replaced, but then at the same time, if it was like a weekend and you were in a pinch and they, you know, you didn't have a better option, you're like, I could probably JB weld that and go riding on Sunday if I needed to, you know? So I got the Better Than Nothing bin. It works good.
I never discard the old levers. I just keep the best one. Like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just yeah. Like, cause yeah, better than nothing. Who knows what'll happen? Like,
totally.
Rocks don't give a shit about your budget.
Yeah. About your budget, about COVID back orders, about yeah. the fact that the shop is closed on a Sunday and it's like the best group ride that's happening of all time. And you're like, oh man,
yeah,
I'd like to go on that, but I got a hole in my case or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. So group rides, you mentioned those. How big is too big of a group?
Dude, so this past, it's really funny that you asked that because this year, I kind of was like, you know what, man? Like, I don't ride with enough, like, locals. You know what I mean? It's crazy, but I have this, anyone who's not from PG is like, oh, Jason Amborg in No Way Famous. Like, be sweet to ride with him. And then it's like, I go to the trail and I'm like, I don't know anyone here. Like, what are you doing? So I was like, I need to start to make relationships locally, because I want to be able to mix it up. I want to ride with different people and I want to like help grow the sport locally, you know? And so I started to do group rides. Every Tuesday night, I built a little like Facebook page and I set up like a new event, and it's every Tuesday night. And I'm kind of trying to go like medium difficulty and then an easy difficulty the next week, and then back to a medium difficulty. And actually, nah, tomorrow night is our like first hard ride. So that'll be fun. I think there's a couple things with a group ride. If you do well, you can scale the size of it, I think, a lot better. And so we've had some success where a couple things, like your lead and like your trail boss and your sweep, like the person at the back, need to be on the same page, like as far as what's the loop that we're doing, what are trail names called, like when are we stopping, you know, all of that sort of stuff. I think having like that lead and tail guide are like both important. And then also making sure that people, if they are unsure, it's like, oh, you got to a Y, and maybe for everyone else it was very obvious that you're supposed to go right, but you're unsure, it's like, don't just make a call, like just wait. And that's what the tail guide is for, you know, that's what the sweep is for. So making sure everyone's kind of on that page. And then the other thing that I think helps a lot with group rides is right at the very start, be like, hey, guess what, everyone? This is like not a pissing contest. Like, nobody cares if you're the fastest person. You're going to fall in between your lead and your tail. And this ride is only successful if we all get done this ride, you know, like that's the mark of a successful trail ride. Cause I've been on ones before where like, so-and-so is like, oh, look it, I'm going to, it's like, what are you even trying to accomplish? Like, you're now, we've lost you. And now we're like, everyone's deciding if we should go and try and find you or like what to do, you know? And so, yeah, I think one of the first rides we did with this big group thing was like 15 or 16 guys. And, that was the biggest ride I'd ever been on, but we kind of like established all those rules early on, right before we even left the trucks, and it turned out to be pretty good. My sweet spot is obviously like two to three people, you know, like, especially if you're trying to put in like a real hard ride or like something where there's some, you know, some of those days you just want to like suffer and like push yourself. But yeah, I think the biggest thing for a successful group ride is it's only successful if everyone has fun and if everyone like, you know, makes it as a group.
Yeah. Bikes intact.
Yeah.
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 Do you guys carry Garmin InReach or anything like that? Or is there like full cell phone coverage where you ride?
Dude, we're so spoiled in Prince George. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, our main trail network, and obviously like, knock on wood, I know it's not going to be here for my lifetime. Like, it'll eventually go away, but it is straight up in town. Like, it's like from my house, from literally like majority of people's houses to where we ride, max distance is like 20 minutes, you know? Oh, wow. And so it's like full cell service, really, really good access. And like, you know, I've been riding all those trails now for such a long time that, even if you find yourself in a pickle, I know like, okay, what's the easiest way to get us out of here? You know, what's the shortest way to get us to somewhere where a vehicle could get to, like all of those sorts of things. And we are really lucky, you know, like it's a whole other beast, and it's something that I actually do think about, because I think about myself as a rider. One of my biggest weak spots is that kind of like survivability or like those skills that are like off bike skills that make other riders like way more talented in some respects, you know, like that ability to navigate with GPS or that ability to, you know, get themselves out of a jam in like true survival situations. We don't really have that. We'll do like one or two mountain rides a year. And it's like, even those are like, you drive up a logging road and then like poke up near the Alpine. You're like, oh, cool. Okay. Back home now. You know, it's I watch, you know, some of the stuff like over in the Kootenays or in like, you know, Southern Alberta, like the big mountain stuff, you're like, all right, like that's real riding. You know, if you have run into an issue, like you got to be prepared. I go out, I got like a granola bar and like a little hand saw, and I'm like, cool, let's go dirt biking, you know?
Yeah, the guys I ride with, they carry the InReach. And so yeah. I just ride with them, so I don't have to have a subscription. And then, I used to always carry 3 days of food, these little bar pack things, like whatever. It's horrible. It's basically peanut butter and coconut, just high sugar little cubes that'll keep you alive, expands and makes you feel full. But that's just
crazy.
Yeah. Well, from hunting, I just always plan when I go hunting out in the big mountains to get screwed over, fall off a tree or something like that, like, and be stuck out there for a couple of days before anyone thinks to look for me or can even find me. Cause trying to move quietly, you don't really leave much trace. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if you're really hurt, like, cause every year somebody gets attacked by a bear or whatever, you know, God forbid that's the scenario. Cause then it doesn't matter how much food you have, but
like, yeah, you got bigger problems.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you just get lost, I mean, I can remember one time going into the woods at night and then it being so dark, we couldn't really see. So we walked our way out based on feel, like, cause we knew the terrain kind of in the daylight, and we ended up just doing 3 circles over the same terrain. Like, cause we had, there was nothing, there was no sky, there was no nothing. And, I decided to leave some markers, and we come back to the markers second time, back to the markers third time. And just like, fuck, like,
dude, that's so gnarly.
Yeah.
That's honestly something, like I said, like those survival skills or those kind of like backcountry skills, I think is an area that I'm weak. And then the other area that I'm weak, I know I'm weak, and I'm trying to get better at is like mental fortitude and not being like a worrywart or like somebody who kind of starts to panic. Like even a good example, like last winter we were on a ride, and I ride all year round. Like I stud my tires and we keep a track plowed in a guy's backyard. But then if there's low snow, like we can go and ride our single track and it's still like good. And we were on a ride and the sun was setting, like the days are short, and I didn't fully charge the battery that powers my headlight. And then the guy that I was with, his bike was kind of acting funny. It was like, he had like a burnt out clutch, but then at the same time, it was also like, it wasn't starting every time when he like hit the starter. And I was like, man, if his clutch fries or his bike stops running, he's like the only one with a real headlight. And then if my battery dies, then I don't have a headlight and it's getting dark. And we like had found ourselves kind of in that, you know, when you're in that scenario where it's like, we've gone beyond 50%, but we're at like 51% and we're realizing it's bad, you know? Yep. So it's like
point of no return.
Yeah. 6 of 1, half a dozen the other. Right. So this all started to happen and like, I'm just kind of freaking out, but I can't, cause he's like not as strong of a rider. So he's kind of like relying on me to know where we are and what to do next. And I just remember like being way too panicked in that situation. Cause the most ridiculous piece of that is like I told you, like we're so close to everything. Like worst case scenario, we literally lay the bikes on their side and we walk like an hour and we're just back to the vehicle. You know, like it realistically doesn't matter. We like follow the track, but I've kind of, like I said, recognized that as a weakness, and it's like trying to find ways to deal with that or like process those situations better so that I'm not like a liability to myself, just in general and in riding scenarios, you know, like be less of the problem and more of part of the solution.
Yeah. That's a big deal, man. Like, confidence in the woods, keeping your head, especially if it ends up being like a multi-day adventure, unplanned multi-day adventure, just keeping your stress levels down gives you like the best chance of survival, you know, like,
yeah. I think also though, not being like the overly confident asshat who's like, oh yeah, we got this.
No, it's no,
like,
that's also,
oh, do you know what we should do is just not go down into that gully. Cause that would be dumb, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. And never put yourself in a spot. Like I think about that when we're going through the mountains, and just like not like going in a new trail, obviously other people have been on the trail because I'm following like established trails, but then there'll be like a line, like a mountain line that's just like down. And it's like, can I make that hill climb back up? Like,
yeah,
people have gone down it. And then if I do get down there, what about the other side? Cause sometimes seismic lines look completely vertical. And then, you know, when you get there, they're not. And then sometimes they don't. Right. When you get there, they are. Like, or there's a 4 foot section that you can't get up, you know, just like, so I'm always wondering if I'm going to end up down in a fucking ditch, you know, just like, just commit, right? Like,
totally.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, we got like an hour and a half here and it's 9 o'clock. So I'm going to wrap this up. Sure. Is there anybody you want to thank or anything like that?
Yeah, well, thank you. And then I just want to like, obviously I have a bunch of sponsors. I think PG Motorsports is the biggest one. They're like the local shop here in town, and John and the whole crew there has been like so rad in supporting the things that I'm doing, and obviously all the other sponsors who support me. But I think the biggest thing is like just thanking all the community who is, you know, stoked on what I'm making, are engaging with me and asking me questions. Like I said, it's a trip to think that anyone would take my opinion with any sort of decision making, but I don't take it lightly. And I'm like really thankful that I've been able to, yeah, make stuff that people are stoked on and seen support from it. So I, yeah, I enjoy the process.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.